And welcome to another Tech Plus with myself, Ian, and also Kane. It's time for us to look at this week's biggest tech stories in South Africa and also all across the globe. Kane, hello, welcome back to the studio, man. How's it going?
Thank you for having me. It's going well. I'm glad to be back. New week. It's getting cold now and dark. You're really feeling the winter onset now.
It really is, hey?
It really is. It's coming on quite quick. I mean, we walk around and it's like 6 o'clock and we're like, whoa, it feels literally like dark already.
It feels like 8 or 9 o'clock, but it's only 6 o'clock. And wait for the cold fronts to come, eh?
Oh, I'm not ready. In the morning it already takes, you know, by 10 it's starting to really warm up again, at least where I am.
Yeah, but you moved recently, so hopefully your new house is a bit warmer than your old one. Is it already warmer?
There's just actually sun hits.
I'm happy for you because you were like frozen. And your old house, you came here with icicles on you.
Yeah, man. It was especially around now, like the winter time. If you don't have like a good spot with sun, you definitely feel the brunt of it. But nothing that a little bit of heating can't solve.
Yeah.
Which is crazy that, you know, in South Africa at least, we don't build central heating into houses. At Mm-mm. least not the houses that I know of.
No. I've never seen a house with central heating in this country.
And maybe it sounds crazy, but one of the things that I found most interesting about, you know, if you look at the difference between something like America and South Africa in terms of how we heat the house. First of all, America will have like central heating and it can be gas fed or electrically fed, right? So there's like burners and things and it transports air around the house.
And they've got those furnaces.
Yeah, and they have like furnaces that they'll keep going.
In the basement. Heat the whole house. It's a bit creepy.
It is. It's kind of like out of a horror movie. Hey?
It is, yeah.
You never go to the furnace.
Yeah, they always make it look so creepy on TV.
But what I found very interesting is that the idea about gas bottles, every time your gas bottle runs out, go get a new gas bottle. That's completely absent in America. They're fed with the same, like the pipe, like the same way water. They're fed gas.
They have all those gas pipes and sometimes it goes wrong and then they blow up entire neighborhoods.
I've heard of a few houses just exploding.
Yeah, I've seen there was like a doorbell video camera footage of a house once. Something went wrong with I think the guy, he lit, or he was busy working on it, or I don't know, and he lit up a cigarette, or I don't know if he lit up his lighter or whatever, and the next moment that house was just, it just exploded into a million pieces. And a piece of it actually fell right here in front of the camera where it was taking, you know, filming from. And it was like 10 houses away.
That's crazy.
And there was nothing left of that house afterwards. When all the dust and smoke settled, you know, there was nothing left.
Which is crazy if you think about it, because houses aren't built like it's not built out of straw.
Yeah, there was nothing left, not a brick.
That is wild.
And obviously nothing left of the guy who was in the house.
Imagine he walked out of that.
I mean, Mr. Knight Rider.
That was a close one. Thank goodness. I was wearing my protective hat.
Probably shouldn't smoke, yeah.
So, that's funny. Let me ask you, do you know about Ozo? Ozo is a payment processor. You might have seen them at the checkout.
Yes, on Takealot.
You can get it on Takealot. A lot of retailers also have it, like Bid or Buy would probably have it. Mm. And Ozo was actually really, really popular. There was a time in South Africa where most of your purchases would be done by EFT.
Mm.
Like the website wouldn't even have card support.
Yeah.
You couldn't even use a credit card or a debit card. You just had to do an EFT. Yeah. And then began the 2 to 3 day, you know, gray hair inducing stress of, are they going to run away with my money?
Yep.
Have they received my money?
That's the way we started.
What if I sent my money to the wrong place? You know, and they haven't got it yet.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who gets so paranoid about that stuff.
I freak out. I've looked up a guy who sends emails, like 10 emails in the week. Like, have you made the, can you just confirm signs of life? Please. You know.
But you have to be like that in these times anyway, because so many scams around.
It is. I mean, technology's caught up now that if you send money, it arrives most of the time, as long as you didn't make a mistake. But Ozo invented a little product that most of you would recognize called the Instant EFT. Not an instant bank transfer, but an instant method in which to make a payment that didn't revolve around doing an instant transaction through your bank. It kind of facilitated receiving and delivering of the money by allowing you to log into your banking through Ozo. And when you made the payment, it was able to detect and confirm that the payment had been made successfully. So they were very successful. And the only way that they got successful was an investor called Kalen Venture Partners, one of Ozo's original investors, made a capital injection into the business and helped them scale. But then I made a second injection into the business. So he made a pre-seed, and then he made a Series A investment as well, which helped them go and do some localization, because they're not just South African, they're actually quite predominant throughout Africa. And that investor now is seeking to exit Ozo. So Kalon operates as a Section 12 venture capital company, which affords it certain tax benefits for holding on to investments for at least 5 years. It invested in Ozo twice, once in 2017 pre-seed, and 5 years later in a Series A funding round in 2019. According to Kalon's website, Inter identifies clear exit strategy before investing in any company, and went on to say that even though the exit comes last, the exit strategy is built into the structure of the company. From when we make the initial investment, we ensure the company founders and board are aligned on the next strategy. So word that this particular investor is seeking to exit its stake comes as founder Clive Butkow stepped down as the CEO in November 2023. I just find it fascinating because, you know, the company hit 10 billion rand in transactions processed in March 2020. I mean, that was 4 years ago. Right, and continue to grow and scale rapidly despite initially facing headwinds from local banks. The great story. I've got an idea to make payments between banks faster, and banks are like, that's a terrible idea. Don't mess with what isn't broken. You know, and here we go, you know, years and years later, one of the biggest payment processes in Africa, which is actually, it's recording about 120,000 new users every month.
Wow.
Which is pretty crazy. It really shows the e-commerce growth in South Africa. That is a direct relation to a person's desire to purchase something online via a method that doesn't rely on some human being on the other end taking receipt of money via reference and going online and making an email to you and saying, hey, we got your funds. You know, outside of obviously card payments, which is something that you would probably do on something like Takealot.
Mm.
But it's awesome to see these kind of products exist, because we wouldn't have the e-commerce marketplace we have today if these type of facilitators weren't there to do the trust handshake. Because when you can purchase someone once and you receive your goods, you're going to buy again.
Yeah.
Did you receive your Temu stuff yet, by the way?
No.
Really? Damn.
No, but hold on. It arrived, I think on Wednesday, it arrived in Joburg.
Okay.
And then it was transferred to a third party courier or something.
Okay.
So now it will probably arrive from the 24th, which is, that was yesterday. So probably arrive in the next 5 days, I think.
Wow. You excited? Did you buy a lot of stuff, or was that testing the water? Was that the handshake?
That was the handshake. But it's so funny that you're talking about this stuff now. It's almost like you read my mind, because this week I had to make quite a big purchase on Takealot because I had a terrible technological failure.
Oh, did you have a new laptop or something?
No, come on, no.
It got me excited there. What did you do? What did
my freaking TV broke, dude.
What? Damage or happenstance?
No, I didn't know that TVs last 5 to 7 years.
You thought they just last forever?
Yeah, no, but I thought you could push it for 10 years, but not with all the load shedding we had in the past. But this one was creeping up on 6 years this coming September.
That's actually pretty impressive.
I didn't know I had the TV for that long. I went back in my search history and I was like, whoa, I got it in 2018 already. That's six years ago.
I mean, I bought a monitor that was 10,000 Rand, a monitor, and it broke after 2 years. So six years is a pretty decent.
Yeah, and it's not. It wasn't even a big brand name. So guess who had to buy a new TV now? I've been without a TV now for 4 or 5 days.
You bought a new one though.
There's a new one coming in the morning.
Can I guess which brand it was?
Through Takealot.
It's either Skybox, or what is it called? Or Hikvision.
No.
Samsung?
Nope.
LG.
No.
Ooh, what
are those
be?
The ones that break?
No, these are just TV brands. Oh. I'm just spitting it out. what else could it be? I feel like I'm missing a brand. Tell me. I'm never going to get it.
I'll tell you later.
No. Suspense. Stick around for the end of the show. I don't like it though, because we're doing what I don't like in TV shows, you know, when they end it right before something big.
Yeah, the cliffhanger.
And I was watching a show other day. I think it was The Circle, and they were about to announce who leaves The Circle. And they had this big, you know, like,
build up.
This is happening, and this is happening, and this is happening. And then it was the end of the show.
Oh.
And then the next episode, it goes through the whole, torture. This is happening, and this is happening.
No. That's torture. Especially if you can't see the new episode right away, if you have to wait a week. That's how we used to watch TV, eh?
So here's something that I found very interesting, right? Toyota, you know, everybody knows a Toyota. In fact, I think, I don't know if it was because my dad, I grew up and he had a Toyota, Hilux or whatever, but you can hear a Toyota coming from a mile away.
Mm.
If it pulls up behind you, it's either a Hilux or a Fortuner. You can just,
even
know.
The old ones, you can hear a Corolla and all those Toyotas coming.
Well, now Toyota says it's 48-volt mild hybrid Hilux and Fortuner models sold well in their first full month of sales. So the Japanese car maker's mild hybrid Fortuner and Hilux models officially went on sale in late March 2023, with Toyota offering three variants of the 48-volt Fortuner and six variants of the 48-volt Hilux. My Broadband asked Toyota how popular these models have been since they launched, and Toyota says interest in its 48-volt models has been decent and provided figures on the share of sales made up by its mild hybrids. These are as follows. So you've got your 2.8-litre Hilux Raider. Remember, these are hybrids. So they have electric and a diesel. 17%. The 2.8% 2.8-liter Hilux Legend, 19%. The 2.8-liter Fortuner, 25%. And the 2.8-liter VX Fortuner at 40%. Pricing for the 48-volt Fortuner starts at $929,000 and goes up to $980,000, while Toyota's mild hybrid Hilux starts at $775,000. And goes up to 1.02 million rand. Toyota first announced its plans to introduce mild hybrid versions of the Hilux and Fortuner in June 2023. I didn't think these cars would be coming out as hybrids. I always thought, Toyota, Hilux and Fortuner, these are mega like wheeler cars. I always picture any farmer who knows his stuff probably has a Hilux.
Oh, bucky, yes.
You know?
Especially in this country.
You need it to graduate from farming school. You need to make a down payment on
Fortune. If you see the boer, you can actually... There's always a Hilux or some kind of Toyota bucky with the boer.
And it's a great car.
It is. It's very reliable.
All round a proper good car. And to see a hybrid version of it come out, I think is crazy. And also the fact that it has some adoption in South Africa is something to really be happy about. But that's not the only thing about electric cars in South Africa that has some good news. Apparently, South Africa's electric car sales have surged all round. So the National Association of Automobile Manufacturers of South Africa, NAMSA, that's literally their name, National Association of Automobile Manufacturers of South Africa,
ish,
or NAMSA, two A's,
okay,
quarterly review for Q1 2024 shows a significant increase in new energy vehicles, or NEVs, sales compared to the same period the year before. According to its data, 3,042 new electric vehicles were sold in South Africa between January and March 2024, compared to 1,665 vehicles sold during the same period in 2023. This represents an increase of nearly 83%. Really, really good. That's a number, you know. That's a really big increase, almost 100% increase in the sales of new electric vehicles. And NEVs comprise fully electric, plug-in hybrid, and traditional hybrid vehicles. So it can be hybrid, plug-in hybrid, or just fully electric, are represented as that 3,042 vehicles sold in the last, you know, 3-4 months, basically. Which is pretty impressive. I'm really glad to see that. I mean... Let's be real, the electric charging solutions here in the Garden Route area could definitely still evolve a few clicks.
Yeah.
I've seen one or two or three, but I haven't seen as many as what you would see normal, you know, garages. And it's pretty strange because, you know, it's going to take you 5, 10, 15 times longer at a petrol station to charge up your electric vehicle. Just for a small charge than it would for you to show up at a Shell. Shell changed its name. Did you see that?
Shell.
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 I don't know if it was Shell or Caltex. Caltex. To yeah. Tecron or something. What did it change
its name to? Yeah, some new name, but yeah, they rebranded all their canopies and everything's been rebranded.
And it was quick.
Very quick, like overnight.
Night and day. Yeah, these are pros.
I must say, I like the new colors.
I do.
It's very striking. It's like a purple and a red, I think.
But I'm not going to lie, I really like the Caltex colors.
Oh, wait, no. It's orange and purple.
Orange and purple. Yeah.
As you see, even the canopies, like, you know, that thing that yes. goes over.
Yes.
The petrol station.
Yes.
Even that thing's been upgraded.
They,
it just happened overnight. That's a big task.
They changed that quick, eh? These are professional rebranders yeah. right here. Just in and out, 10 seconds. Like, I thought it was a new petrol station.
Yeah, same.
But I found out Caltex changed their name.
Yeah, you won't find the Caltex in South Africa anymore in the months to come. It's quite a big one.
You know, speaking of which, how is your cell reception lately? How has it been treating you? Have you found you stay connected often?
No.
I feel like
the signal is always low, and there's no load shedding, so I don't know what the excuse is. What's happening?
It's not good. It feels like I can't walk around off of Wi-Fi. You know, when you walk around just on cellular network, it feels like it can be really hard to continuously be engaged in a WhatsApp call, for example. It
yeah.
feels like that absolute connectivity is lacking. But here's something very interesting. Remember when we spoke about the spectrum auctions? It was different mobiles, internet providers bidding to basically purchase spectrum allocation in order for them to basically provide a service. So Cell C apparently has forfeited the spectrum it won at auction in March 2022 after failing to pay the 288 million rand it bid for the precious resource. This is according to Vodacom regulatory affairs executive Andrew Burdens in the footnotes of an affidavit filed as part of an unrelated court case. Vodacom is suing the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa, or ICASA, for approving certain spectrum pooling deals between MTN and other network operators. Barron's, very interesting surname, said that according to ICASA's rules governing the spectrum's auction, Cell C has forfeited its spectrum assignment by not paying for it. My Broadband contacted Cell C for comment, but it could not provide feedback by the publication. News that Cell C forfeited the spectrum comes as a shock, as executive said as recently as February that they were in a position to settle their debt to ICASA, and Cell C said it had paid some of the amount and was in discussions with ICASA to settle the balance, but did not reveal how much it's been paid. Cell C has really dropped a lot in terms of how at the forefront of the competitive landscape they are. I feel like it's very much run by, you know, some of the other companies. And when you take a look at what some of these companies actually did spend at this auction, you'll notice how small and insignificant Cell C and some of the other contenders are. You'll even be surprised to hear what Telkom's, you know, kind of purchase or bidding was. So Vodacom obviously bid almost the most at 5.4 billion rand to acquire 110 megahertz of bandwidth across three frequency bands. Remember, Cell C is 200 odd million rand. These guys buying, Vodacom buying 5.4 billion rand. MTN bid nearly 5.2 billion rand. Telkom bid 2.2 billion rand, and Cell C bid second least, offering 288 million rand, and Liquid bid 111 million rand. Very, very crazy to see that. And obviously, I mean, to make a bid as big as Cell C, make a bid on something and then not actually pay up, I always thought that's like a total no-no. You know, if you go to like an auction or something and you're like, yes, I'll bid that, and you win the bid, but you don't have the money to pay it, that's a sticky situation to find yourself in. And here's another interesting situation. South Africa's big light bulb ban kicked in on Friday, yesterday. So apparently now certain types of light bulbs you're not allowed to have. It's illegal to have certain types of light bulbs. And let's take a look at that. So today marks 12 months since Trade and Industry Minister Patel published South Africa's new light bulb regulations. The new specifications, which aim to enhance safety, performance and energy efficiency, effectively ban incandescent and compact fluorescent lamp bulbs for household use. So no more incandescent, no more compact fluorescent lamps. And the way that they do this is they've set a minimum luminous efficiency. What that means is you can only, you know, you're not allowed to generate a certain amount of light per watt. If it is a, if the wattage is too high for the amount of light that it produces, you're not allowed to have it. So that amount, in layman's terms, is 90 lumens per watt, or LM per W. And for electric lamps from today, incandescents and CFLs don't meet these standards. So technically, you're not actually legally allowed to be using these anymore. I wonder if someone's going to come to your house and be like, right, we need to check how many lamps you have.
Unscrew your light.
So we need to measure your lumens per watt immediately.
You have a light. Get a light.
It's going to be met with very angry people. Like, first you take our lights away, and now we're not even allowed to have lights anymore with this power. What do you want from me?
Oh,
you
that's know? Funny.
But now when you go to a shop, you won't be able to find these certain lights. So I think a lot of people in South Africa will end up changing fittings potentially. You know, yeah. They might actually have to change ballasts for certain lights and things like that. Some might be able to just get away with an LED alternative. But as of yesterday, those have been officially phased out, which is good. You know, if you say you're going to do something, you might as well do it. Yeah. And do you remember Mango Airlines?
Yeah.
Did you ever take a flight with Mango?
No.
Didn't Mango have good ads?
Not that I know of. No, that was Kalula.
Kalula.com. Jeez, yes. How can you ever forget that, eh?
They had really good branding and advertising.
So apparently a company has put in a bid to buy Mango Airlines.
Mm.
So according, because remember Mango Airlines went into business rescue as part of the whole SAA thing. So according to Mango's business rescue practitioner, the company had the all clear to proceed with its sale from understate carrier South African Airways following a ruling by the Supreme Court in March 2024. So apparently they had 4 years maintained that Mango remained viable provided a private investor could provide the necessary capital injection and the airline received its due from the form of a bailout provided by Parliament. The court had dismissed Public Enterprises Minister Pavron Gordhan's appeal against the September 2023 decision by the North Gauteng High Court, which ordered the minister to decide whether Mango could be sold to a private investor within 30 days. That ruling was based on legislation, and apparently someone has actually come along and purchased it. So while Sono himself has not confirmed the name of the acquiring investor, a letter from the court obtained by News24 has revealed that Ubuntu Air Services is the buyer of Mango Airlines. And the company's directors are Marian Sandu, founders and CEO of tour operator Africa Stay, and Josh Lewitt, CEO of financial services company DG Capital. So, Plain Talking Managing Director Lyndon Burns told My Broadband that he was curious to know Ubuntu's motivation for the acquisition of the company's name as well as what remained of Mango. And this is where it gets very interesting. Because to say that someone has come and purchased Mango, you got to ask, well, what are they buying? Because apparently there's no aircrafts, no personnel, no routes, no licenses, no infrastructure for ticketing sales, no distribution, no revenue management, operations and maintenance. There's none of that. So what are you buying if you're buying Mango?
Mm.
Right? That's the big question. According to the BRP's latest calculations, Mango has assets only worth about 100 million rand and liabilities of 3 billion rand.
That's it, I'm out.
Unflown tickets. I mean, what are you buying?
Sorry.
Trip on the Titanic after it starts sinking. I don't understand. So Burns acknowledged that he was not a marketing and brands expert, but questioned what value remained in the Mango brand and the name. If one is going to spend the money on the aircraft staff skills or expertise, why not also opt for a clean slate with a name and a brand? And I think that's a pretty fair assumption. Now, why would you buy this if not to do that? Burns said he was unfamiliar with Ubuntu and its proposal to do with Mango. However, the current information he does have indicates that the airline was unlikely to return as a major domestic flight provider. So you ask, well, what will Mango return as? Or will it even return under the name Mango? So he said, also went on to say that all I have heard and its secondhand unverified info is that it will not be operating as a scheduled airline. Instead, Mango could function as Africa Stay's aviation component, similar to how TUI or Thomas Cook operates in Europe. If this is the case, then it won't be a direct competitor to SAA, Lyft, Airlink, Chem Air, or Fly Safair, as its flights would be grouped together with accommodation, land, transport, meals, and excursions as an all-inclusive package. Now that's pretty interesting. You know, someone's buying an airline to potentially bundle it into accommodation purchases. When you see that thing, you know, go to Mauritius for 24,000 Rand all included, then included in that is an airline plane ticket which cannot be purchased commercially.
Yeah.
It can only be purchased within a bundle of the distributed vendors. I thought, yeah, that's pretty interesting, eh?
Yeah.
Would it be worth buying a random company though that has no planes, no staff?
I don't think so.
This is something worth watching and seeing what actually happens. Because I knew Mango. Mango I thought would never die. I thought Mango was like solid, but no, apparently not.
I'm actually glad you brought that story up. But we do for some music, and then we'll stay in the air with another story. And then also we got to talk about BritBox exiting South Africa, because that was quite a shocking story week. Stay tuned. Yes, welcome back to Tech Plus with myself, Jan, and also Kane. Now, just before the music, we spoke about, or Kane spoke about Mango Airlines. But as hectic as that sounds, it's no comparison to this story.
Oh, no. What are you about to drop on us?
Shame. I mean, the people almost dropped out of the plane.
Something was dropping. It wasn't facts.
Okay, so this week it was a big story in the news. It was a Boeing 777-300. It was carrying 211 passengers and 18 crew members. And it had severe turbulence over the Indian Ocean. That was on Tuesday.
I heard about this.
Listen, those people, those who weren't...
Buckled in.
Basically went through the ceiling.
Wow.
And your hectic head wounds, spinal injuries, a lot of patients, more than 20 still in ICU after this incident. Even a two-year-old child is in
the
ICU.
The plane hit a dragon or something. Like, what happened?
Yeah, so almost 50 passengers and two crew members are still receiving treatment, and there was one fatality, a 73-year-old British man who died of a heart attack. I would have a heart attack as well. There's just no freaking way I would survive that thing. This whole plane, they said everybody was just, they were just sitting and everything, la 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 la. And then they all felt the plane drop, like everything collapses from under you. And those who weren't wearing their seatbelts launched immediately into the ceiling. Now we know why those, what do you call them? The flight wardens.
Yes.
Now, why they always say, you know, buckle up. What they always say? Fasten your seatbelt.
Fasten your seatbelt.
There's that little sign.
Don't get out your seat if the seatbelt light is on, you know?
Yeah.
Stay buckled in.
This is hectic, eh? And I saw there was a study saying that, you know, in the years to come, also due to climate change, there will be more turbulence in the planes due to the way our environment and the air is ultimately changing. And then talking about changes... this week, people were shocked. I don't know if you were also shocked, Kane. I don't know if you're a subscriber to it. But a lot of people were shocked. They dropped their British tea and cucumbers when they found out that BritBox is leaving South Africa along
not
with...
the cucumbers.
BritBox is leaving South Africa along with other companies who also exited here. What was the other one? Rolex? Rolex left South Africa. I didn't even know they were here.
I didn't know they were here.
Same.
Goodbye.
And then what's the other one?
BritBox.
Is it Shell? I'm not sure. One of those big companies in the petrol industry. But anyway, so now people are asking on Facebook, you know, they're asking BritBox TV's official page, why are you leaving? Why are you leaving? And what's happening? And obviously, BritBox is posting a reply, copy and paste the whole time. The same reply to everybody, saying BritBox has made the difficult decision to discontinue the service in South Africa to align with the brand's strategic priorities. This decision follows careful consideration of market dynamics and business objectives. And what most people are saying is translate that into simple terms, they didn't have enough subscribers here in South Africa.
Wow.
What do you say?
I think it's very expensive to run a streaming service. I think if they didn't leave because they were chased out, then they left because it's just non-economical to try and stream large volumes of data. Because the way that the data acquisition, or at least your transmission solutions work, is you've got to buy infrastructure. You've got to buy servers. You've got to rent it. I don't think they pay for usage. They're not like billed at the end of the month saying, like Amazon Web Services, you'll be billed at the end of the month and they'll say, hey, you used X amount of processing power, therefore you must pay X amount of money. I think these guys have to pay a fat flat fee, and then they have to make profit on top of that. And I think if you don't have enough subscribers, that's just a chunk of money exiting your account every single month.
But they were really pushing specials. Like, I was wondering, it got a bit suspicious because they were constantly emailing those who had subscriptions previously, or those who had trials like I did, saying that you can get 3 months now for cheaper, you know. And I was wondering, why are they pushing it like this? I think that was to get people back. But as a lot of people say, they didn't have a lot of new content. It was all the old, the really good British comedies on there. But I mean, once you watched it, there's nothing new, so not enough new stuff to, you know, justify what you're paying for it. So there goes good old BritBox. They are stopping the service here in South Africa in August, and I see already people have complications because some people got it as gifts for a year in advance, and now they're going to be cut off in August.
That's
so
rough.
Now the question is, will they be refunded? We actually had a poll this week on eRadio. SA.com on the Facebook page, and we asked, BritBox TV announced it will end its streaming service in South Africa, will you miss it? And 19% said yes, what a loss. 28% said no, there was nothing on anyway, and the majority, 52%, said, what is a BritBox? I think this actually explains it.
That is so funny. They didn't know. You don't know about it. The only reason I knew about it is because you told me about it. And the only reason you knew about it is because it had something that you liked.
I can't imagine you watching British shows.
I try.
It's not on brand for you.
So remember the internet cable that broke?
Yes, and then it broke again.
It broke again. So apparently the repairs on the Eastern African Submarine System, or SA cable, are underway, and traffic is expected to have returned by today. So this was been resolved yesterday on Friday morning.
Oh, awesome.
So according to the West Indian Ocean Cable Company, which also said that while no clear cause has been identified regarding the break, the damage was consistent with a heavy object being dragged over it. So remember that next time you take your ship out, Ion, you can't just drop anchor wherever you want so carelessly, but people are trying to connect to the internet. Yeah.
Well, I had to stop the ship, you know.
That's crazy. So, you know, speaking of ships, apparently those big cruise liners actually have a lot of animal life that follow them because people throw stuff overboard and stuff like that.
Oh, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Free
so
food.
Next
score.
Time you're thinking of jumping off, just remember there's some pretty big animals swimming behind there waiting for anything to fall off.
I didn't think of it that
way. Yeah, you don't want to think about it too long. So apparently this cable's basically repaired, but that doesn't stop Google. Google is apparently linking not just South Africa, some other African countries we'll talk about in a minute, with Australia through another undersea cable. So Alphabet is the company behind Google, is building out the first undersea fiber optic cable that will directly connect Africa with Australia, helping shore up internet access in one of the least connected parts of the world. The cable, called Amuga, follows the construction of Google's Equino cable that connects Africa with Europe. The new line will start in Kenya and travel overland south through Uganda, Rwanda, Congo, Zambia, Zimbabwe, and South Africa before crossing the ocean to Australia, the company said in a blog post on Thursday. The new infrastructure will improve coverage on the continent, which has suffered this year from cable damages, which we know too well. There are relatively few subsea connections to Africa and limited to terrestrial infrastructure, making it more difficult to reroute traffic. US President Joe Biden and Kenyan President William Ruto are meeting in Washington this week on a state visit aimed at deepening US ties with Africa. A lot of interest in Africa at the moment, that is for sure. And great to see them connecting more of Africa to the rest of the world. I mean, Africa is going to become an internet hub. It's close to America, it's close to Australia, it's close to Europe. right? It's got so many countries within it, all developing countries, all with millions and billions of people within it, all trying to get connected, all who are either consumers, employees, employers, technology incubators. So very, very exciting to see these kind of developments happening. And it, unfortunately, it couldn't happen without big players like Alphabet with the infrastructure and the means necessary to run such a long cable. Can you imagine the job? I can't even imagine the job trying to identify where this cable broke. 1 minute you're connected, the next minute you're not, and now you have to be like, I think I can figure out where this break is on this 1,000 kilometer long cable in the middle of the ocean.
Don't you think they have like sections, and then at least they can narrow it down to section D, you know?
They must, surely.
Yeah.
But I mean, apparently an anchor is all it takes, a heavy object is all it takes to cut that cable.
Yo.
And in more news, we have Woolworths. You won't believe this. Have you ever heard of W Connect? It's a Woolies subcategory within their business.
Is that how you pay, only by card or something?
Good guess, but you probably wouldn't have heard about it because it's brand new. Woolworths has just started listing various tech products on its website, including smartphones, accessories, gaming consoles, laptops, and tablets. Woolworths, man. Bloody Woolworths. It is called the electronics sections of its online store, W Connect. Additionally, according to an SMS to customers, the retailer has opened, this is crazy, Apple kiosks, or kiosks, at its Menland Park and Sandton City stores. Woolworths says its W Connect department was established in-store in the early 2000s. However, it noted that the online store is a new addition to its platform. Apparently, this has been around for a while. That's why I asked you if I knew it. I didn't ever hear about W Connect. I definitely didn't know about Apple kiosks and things like that.
No.
Kiosks in and around Woolworths stores. I definitely never expected to be able to buy a PlayStation 5 from Woolies. You know, get your healthy food, your Primo curtains, your PlayStation 5.
Where will they put it? In the fridges or where?
So apparently it will be found in 140 physical Woolies stores, and as of November 2023 can now be shopped online too. The brand it offers include Samsung, Huawei, Sony, Nokia, Hisense, Honor, Naomi, and Vivo. Wow, that's pretty cool. And you know what's funny about this is we just last week spoke about Checkers also moving into electronics.
Yeah.
So now we have Takealot. In a world where we had Takealot and Kalahari and Bid or Buy, we now no longer have Kalahari. Takealot ate it like an apple. So we have Takealot,
Kalahari,
Bid or Buy, and Checkers, right? And Woolies. And you know what's quite funny to me is Takealot eventually started selling groceries. And now you have grocery stores selling electronics. Yeah. And you got to ask, who will win the market share?
Well, we're winning all the way because variety is amazing.
Exactly.
I mean, it's so, like for me now, when I needed a new TV, just two buttons and I had a new TV. Well, even though it takes a while being out here in the sticks, you know. But if you're in the city, Cape Town or Joburg, you get that TV the same freaking day.
Same day delivery. Yeah. And with Takealot More premium subscription, you now get free deliveries on Mr. D, and you get 10 million same day deliveries, and you can just basically sell everything in your house and get new stuff in your house without leaving your house.
But Ken, last week we spoke about Mr. D and I tried it and it's saying that it's not available in my area. Why?
Because for some reason, certain pockets of Knysna...
Oh, I'm living in the wrong place. Okay. Must I just move to main road or what?
Just don't tell anyone. Pin the main road.
I was actually thinking of doing that.
Pin the main road and then write in the delivery instructions. You didn't hear it from me. I will deny it.
But why? Why do they have these pockets?
I don't know. I think it's because it's a subsidiary of Takealot's delivery network. I think they've not got everything perfectly right with their dropper pin and kind of, I don't know. But it is supposed to be possible. I don't even think they know about these issues, to be honest with you. It's not like that. It's like they can deliver left of us, right of us, front of us, back of us. But this area you are right now, for some reason, is a dead zone.
Weird, oh, wow. Eh? Have you ever been in Woolies or even Checkers and then you watch the shoppers doing the shopping for the online people?
Yes.
This week, a guy almost ran me over with his trolley in Woolies.
Was he in such a rush?
In such a rush, shopping for whoever ordered online.
One guy
online.
In the front of the trolley, one guy in the back of the trolley just grabbed
Just
stuff.
One guy, but man, he was going at a speed, eh? In Woolies. So it's like, that's the service. That's obviously one of the online orders. But they're brutal, hey?
Wow, that's good for them, man. Good business.
In Checkers, I can imagine, you know, because you've got 60 minutes to get it to the person since they ordered and paid and you packed it and you delivered it. It's got all got to be in 60 minutes. Otherwise, they get like credit or something. We'll get it for free. Anyway, so have you done, Kane?
Have I ordered from Mr. D?
No.
What?
Have you made the upgrade?
To
prepaid electricity meter upgrade.
Yes, I have indeed.
Have you? Over what? You beat me because I wanted to do it earlier because we only have until, what's it, the 24th of November. And then if you don't upgrade your electricity meter, then sorry for you. A load shedding all the way.
If you are worried that it's going to take a lot of time, I assure you don't be.
Did you phone the number?
I didn't phone the number.
What did you do?
Someone did it on our behalf.
Oh.
But you literally end up putting two long pieces of strings of numbers into your meter box, and then it's fine. And you keep your same meter number. I would get it done because when November comes rolling through, do you know why it's going offline in November? I'll tell you. It's
somebody said it's similar to a Y2K situation.
Well, in this scenario, when they made these prepaid meters, and bear in mind, this isn't exclusive to South Africa. These are all over Africa.
Yeah.
When they made these, the PIN, that token that you get, how do you think they keep making unique ones for 15 years?
How?
Well, the truth is, eventually, you can't make any more unique numbers.
Is that what happened now?
And that's what happens in November. They run out of unique numbers to make. So they have to reset it so they can have
makes
new
sense now.
Unique
Thank
numbers.
You.
How interesting is that? Such a simple thing, but such a big problem.
Thank you for that. I was wondering why they're doing that. But I mean, obviously, it's almost like a software upgrade that you have to do, and they either come to your place or you can phone. I see here in our area, you can phone a municipality and they will give you those codes over the phone. That's quite convenient.
That is convenient.
But apparently, this rollover project is progressing well with 3.61 million. Or that's 52% of the 6.9 million prepayment meters already recoded in mid-May. So it's happening. You know, you will see them coming to your house. Otherwise, as I said, just get it telephonically from your local municipality. You have to give them you got to give them your meter number, hey?
Yeah,
okay. And then you key in the first 20 digits of your recode token, and then you wait for it to be accepted. And then key in the second 20 digits of your recode token, wait for it to be accepted, and then you can key in the 20 digits of your purchase token to recharge.
Yeah, and it works. And even if you buy electricity before, you can still redeem it after.
Oh, really? Can
you? Important note to keep in mind if you're worried about that.
So you won't lose your units.
Nothing. You won't lose your meter number, and you won't lose your units you purchased before. And
yeah,
you won't,
that was a bit of a concern.
If you've bought units and it's still on the slip, you can still redeem those units on that slip. So don't even worry.
But if you have 100 units right now and you do the recode afterwards, you'll still
have 100
your
units. Okay. Yeah. So there's no way to actually lose, which
imagine
is fantastic.
Imagine it resets to zero. Yo, highball.
Speaking of which, is it time for music break?
It is.
Let's do it.
Welcome back to Tech Plus as we almost wrap it up for another week. Kane, what is next?
You've got to hear this. This is crazy. Obviously, AI. We've gone this far without speaking about AI. It's not a happenstance. It's just we speak about AI too much and there's just always AI news. But in light of that, let's talk about it just for a second. Apparently, Meta and Google are pitching AI to Hollywood. This is probably the biggest thing that you as a retail consumer or just a customer of, you know, a consumer of entertainment should know about. Because if you had any reserves about AI and the consumption of content made by AI, you are about to enter a world where you will not be able to tell. you cannot like it as much as you want. You won't be able to tell. And why that is because Meta and Google are pitching AI to Hollywood. Essentially, Bloomberg reports Meta and Google met with major Hollywood studios to license content for their AI video generation platforms. These meetings come after OpenAI reportedly spoke to several Hollywood studios about using its AI video generation model, Sora. Meta has been working on its AI generation model, Emu, since last year. What this really means is if Hollywood is able to actually buy and use Sora, you're going to see AI-generated content inside of movies, and it's just, there's nothing we can do about it. It's going to happen. And in light of that, do not think, what can we even do to stop it? I'll tell you why there's nothing we can do to stop it. In 2023, actually, if you just take the money NVIDIA's made from graphics cards in the last quarter and said, let's pretend to times that by four so we can get an idea of their annual sales, they'll have about $11 billion worth of annual sales for graphics cards for gamers. This quarter alone, NVIDIA has made $14 billion of profit in a single quarter thanks to AI chips. A single quarter. So as much as they would make from gamers and people who buy graphics cards and NVIDIA products for the reasons NVIDIA was started, NVIDIA makes a year's worth of those sales in a single quarter from AI. And even more than that, it's jumped 262%, right? They're basically since the previous quarter. And finally, they expect to hit revenue growth again next quarter, $28 billion. Meaning this quarter they have $14 billion. Next quarter they expect $28 billion. This is all AI tech. This is AI tech, and it is absolutely insane. Mark Zuckerberg has come together to create an AI advisory council. According to Bloomberg, Meta has established a new advisory group that will periodically meet with Meta's management team to provide guidance on the company's advancements in artificial intelligence. The notable council, CEO Patrick Collison, former GitHub CEO Nat Friedman, Shopify CEO Toby Lutke, and former Microsoft exec Charlie Songhurst are all going to be part of the so-called Meta AI advisory board, which is insane. If you ever bought the Spotify car thing, which is basically like a gadget in your car for playing exclusively Spotify music, that has now been discontinued. It will no longer be sold anymore. Daylight DC-1 is a new tablet that has come out with what they call the new type of e-ink. So apparently this is it's a very interesting piece of tech. It's basically, it reminds me of like an e-book. But an ebook meets a less distracting Android tablet. Apparently, the founders and creators of this particular ebook or this particular tablet attempted to build what they call a calmer computer, something that one doesn't emit any blue light. Blue light has often been associated to lack of sleep, like technology devices that emit blue light apparently cause lack of sleep and even unverified eye strain and that sort of stuff. So apparently they built this new piece of equipment that uses what they call e-ink to make like a more paper type visual experience. So when you're reading this book or this newspaper or this article, it feels like you're reading a piece of paper. They actually have an advert that you can go look at, which is called e-ink evolved, which has it like turning pages, similar to how like an e-book turns pages, but it looks very much like paper. And what I thought was very interesting about it is I read one of the podcasts that they were talking about, and they basically said, you know, imagine some of the famous people that have, you know, were super creative back in the day, had access to the technology of today. Like, what if Maya Angelou had a distracting blue light emitting phone? Would she still have been able to write the poetry that she did? So they're trying to make a non-distracting computer that you can just focus in on and be creative with, in a way that doesn't have to do with your traditional creative tools. Like, you know, if you're a writer or you're a poet or you're just an avid consumer of information and you want a very business focused device that is non-distracting, you know, and an Android tablet can be very distracting. I mean, if you just think about it, give it to a two-year-old and it will be sucked in for 2 weeks, and then it will make an app and it will become a millionaire. This is that's what happens. It's the life cycle of a 2-year-old on an iPad, you know. And this is apparently a non-distracting version. So it's called the Daylight DC One. If anyone wants to take a look at that, I bet you didn't know this. Back in the day, when cell phones and things were just coming out, a lot of cyber criminals would create like exclusive hardware that they would use to communicate with each other in an encrypted fashion. But nowadays, things like Signal and Telegram exist, which kind of facilitate that process. But back in the day, it was all done on a hardware level. And there was actually a very interesting book called, I think it's called The True Story of Anom. And Anom was a phone company that was made back in the day that was actually started by the FBI. And the FBI started a real phone company, meaning they had to worry about logistics, manufacturing, sales, customer support, everything. And they did this so that they could access criminal networks and monitor criminal activity. And the reason that they closed it down was because it got too popular with real consumers. It became too good of a phone. And that I thought was very, very interesting. Apparently, iFixit is breaking up with Samsung. So iFixit is basically like a self-fix-diagnose solution. It's like tool pre-built toolkits and things for you to self-repair your devices. And they partner with brands to source repair units and things like that. And apparently Samsung isn't playing ball. It's making it very difficult to... Apparently, iFixit isn't allowed to sell Samsung repair items to the quantity of more than 7 items per customer every 6 months. So Samsung wants to limit you from being able to buy repair parts for your device, more than 7 pieces of repair parts every 6 months or 3 months or whatever, which I thought was flipping crazy. I didn't even know that existed. And lastly, we have the NASA's Psyche mission. So if anyone didn't know, remember we had asteroid Bennu, or whatever it was called, where we had a NASA rocket go and capture a sample from the asteroid and bring it back to Earth. Well, NASA's Psyche mission is gently gliding to its next target now. It's very cool because it's got what they call electric Hall thrusters. It's electric thrusters. It thrusts with electricity, not with fuel. It went on a 6-month trip past Mars to connect with an asteroid, a metal-rich asteroid embedded in the main asteroid belt beyond Mars. And they apparently have said that Psyche, the NASA Psyche, is on a full cruise mode now, 6 months after launching on October 13th, 2023, and is gonna go and make contact with this asteroid to collect a sample yet again. They love collecting their asteroid samples now. They didn't once, now they're obsessed. They're like, I want to know what's in every asteroid in our solar system. And that's very cool. I mean, who would have thought we're throwing devices out there to go pick pieces off of asteroids and bring it back home? That's crazy. And on that note, that's the end.
On that crazy note, it's the end. Kane, thank you so much. Wow, this hour really flew by, and we had so much to talk about. Just another week in technology, and next week will be the same. Because there's always something happening in the tech world, hey?
Same time, same place.
Same time, same place. Kane, thank you so much, and wishing you a wonderful weekend.
And same to you. Thank you so much for all of our listeners for listening in, including my gran today. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week. Cheers, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, gran.
Bye-bye, gran.